Cause you're a sky, cause you're a sky full of stars. Welcome to the first AA podcast of the new year. We passed the winter solstice on the 21st of December, when the declination of the sun was minus 23.435 degrees, the furthest south it will go. It has started to move back up the sky, and by January the 1st its declination will be minus 22.983 degrees, and by the end of January it will have climbed to minus 17.328 degrees. Summer is on its way. On the 1st of January, the sun will rise a little after 8 a.m. and will set around 4 p.m, but by the end of the month the sun will rise around 7:40 a.m. and will set around 4:40 p.m. The moon will be full on January the 2nd, will reach last quarter on January the 8th, will be new on January the 17th, and will reach first quarter on January the 24th. The moon will be full again on January the 31st, so there will be two full moons during this month. The term blue moon is used to describe an event which occurs infrequently. There are a number of definitions of blue moon, but the simplest one is to say that if a second full moon occurs within the same month, then it will have the title blue moon. During winter, the ecliptic, the path that the sun appears to take in its annual journey around the sun, is low during the day and will thus be high during the hours of darkness. The moon and planets follow paths which are on or near to the ecliptic. These celestial bodies are best seen when they are higher in the sky during the hours of darkness and will thus be best presented during winter. This is a good time of the year to learn to recognise the main features of the moon. A good start point is to follow the progress of the moon from new to first quarter through binoculars, which should, if possible, be supported by a tripod. For the first few days after new, the moon will appear as a slender crescent. When the atmosphere is clear, the whole of the moon's disk can often be visible, shining because sunlight is being reflected from the earth to illuminate that part of the moon not directly bathed in sunlight. This phenomenon is known as the new moon in the old moon's arms, and is usually not apparent after day 4 of the moon's cycle. This month, look for it between January the 18th and January the 21st. By day 4 of the moon's cycle, January the 21st, Mare Crisium, the Sea of Crisis, will be fully illuminated. This structure is 280 miles by 348 miles, the total area being a little larger than the area of England. The sea looks round because the longer dimension is foreshortened by the curvature of the moon's surface. The bright crater Proclus should be visible near the western edge of the sea. This is a relatively new crater, its brightness not having had enough time to be dulled by weathering. The Sea of Plenty should be becoming visible below the Sea of Crisis. By day 5, January the 22nd, the Sea of Plenty is visible. To the left of this, the Sea of Nectar should be visible. On the west side of the Sea of Nectar is a chain of three craters thrown into relief by the proximity of the terminator. The craters are, from north to south, Theophilus, Cyrillus, and Caterina. To the north of the Sea of Nectar is the round shape of the Sea of Tranquility, made famous as the landing site of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin from Apollo 11. To the north of Tranquility, the Sea of Serenity is coming into view. And by day 6, January the 23rd, the Sea of Serenity is fully illuminated. The shape, made by the seas Serenity, Tranquility, Plenty and Nectar, resembles a lobster's claw. Serenity and Tranquility form the base segments of the claw, while Plenty and Nectar form the pincers. By day 7, January the 24th, the moon has reached first quarter. The Sea of Serenity is fully illuminated, and the eastern edge of Mare Imbrium, the Sea of Rains, is visible. The mountain ranges, the Alps to the north and the Apennines to the south, are just coming into view. The two ranges define the eastern edge of the Sea of Rains and meet at the border with the Sea of Serenity. To the south, the Terminator throws into focus another trio of craters, which from north to south are Ptolemais, Alphonsus, and Arzachel. Ptolemais is the largest at 92 miles in diameter and lies a little south of the central point of the moon's disk. Alphonsus is smaller, with a central mountain range. Arzachel is the smallest, at 60 miles in diameter. It has a prominent central mountain peak. A map of the moon, such as are printed in many basic astronomy textbooks, will help you to identify these features. And now we move on to the planets. Mercury is visible low down in the southeastern morning sky for the first half of the month. Venus is too close to the sun to be visible, but Mars and Jupiter are both visible in the southeastern pre-dawn sky. They will come together to form a close conjunction on January the 7th, when they will be only a quarter of a degree apart. Jupiter will shine a magnitude minus 1.8, with Mars 3 magnitudes fainter. Saturn is emerging into the dawn sky but is still too close to the sun to be observable. Uranus is visible as a binocular object in Pisces, and Neptune is visible at the beginning of the month but will soon be caught up in the evening twilight. A comet discovered last October, known as 2017 T1 Hines, is expected to reach magnitude plus 9 when it passes 33 kilometres from Earth on the night of the 4th and 5th of January. It will pass through Lynx, Camelopardalis and Cassiopeia during the first days of January. Stars this month. Orion, the Hunter, is prominent at the moment. It is one of the best known constellations, partly because it is compact and easily recognisable, and partly because it is rich in interesting objects. The three most famous are as follows. Betelgeuse is a red giant star, which forms the easternmost shoulder of Orion's body. Its red colour is easily seen in a telescope or binoculars. It is huge, estimated to be about 250 million miles in diameter. The star, which is 310 light-years from us, is thought to be likely to explode as a supernova at some time in the future. Fortunately, it is too far away for the explosion to cause us problems, but is sufficiently near to produce a spectacular display if it blows. The star forming the bottom, western corner of Orion's body, is Rigel. It appears brilliant white in colour, being much hotter than the red Betelgeuse. It is 910 light-years from us and is 60,000 times as luminous as our Sun. Rigel is a double star in that it has a companion known as Rigel B, which is 9.5 seconds of an arc from Rigel. Rigel B is easily visible in a 3-inch refractor telescope. The most famous object in Orion is the Great Nebula M42. This is a star-forming region and is visible to the naked eye. Stars already formed include the Trapezium, a group of four stars which are probably less than 1 million years old. They are extremely hot, emitting most of their energy in the ultraviolet wavelengths. The nebulous gas processes this energy to produce visible light, resulting in the nebula outshining the stars that produced the energy in the first place. Telescopic views of the nebula are stunning, and arguably the most spectacular astronomical sight in a small telescope in the northern sky. That's all for this month. See you in February, which will be the first anniversary of these podcasts.